Welcome, beloved listeners, to another edition of the Little Wireless program, and later in the show, a discussion about the biggest gathering of Indigenous elders in one place ever. It's a meeting to elect a panel of First Nations people that representatives of their concerns. But first, let's deal with the concerns of the electors of Victoria. Usually state elections in Australia are considered to be barometers of the national mood, but no one seems to be sure what this weekend's Victorian election means, even to Victorians, let alone to the rest of Australia. At the beginning of the campaign, Age journal Mark Hawthorne commented thus, "Thanks to the spin doctors, it's Sweaty Dan versus Silly Demis. The choice is yours." So who are Sweaty Dan and Silly Demis? To tell us and help us read the electoral tea leaves, we're joined in our Melbourne studio by Brian Costa. Brian's Professor of Political Science at one of Miles' stamping grounds, Swinburne University. Welcome back to the Little Wireless program.
Thanks, Philip.
Early in the campaign, you were predicting a Labor victory. Has anything happened in the campaign to change that view? Has Labor managed to derail itself, as is so often the case?
No, it hasn't. Its critics, of course, are at it about the East-West link and its claim or promise to cancel the contract. Though that doesn't seem to be grabbing the electorate terribly firmly at all. Labor's kept its campaign pretty well run. In fact, someone said to me that at the beginning of the campaign they didn't think that Daniel Andrews looked like a premier, but they think he does now. So if that's true, then Labor's run a pretty good campaign.
Who are Sweaty Dan and Silly Demis?
Daniel Andrews is the leader of the Labor opposition, and Dr. Dennis Napthine is the Premier of Victoria.
I'd like a little more detail, please.
Well, let's go with Dr. Napthine. Dr. Napthine, in a previous manifestation under the BRACS government, BRACS Labor government, was leader of the opposition and was unable to wrest government from Labor. But he has returned, and that in itself is somewhat controversial, but it went under the radar. He wasn't the one who won the 2010 election. It was Ted Baillieu, who was replaced as leader about 2 years later in much the same way as we saw with Federal Labor.
And indeed State Labor in New South Wales. It's a very short tenure these days, isn't it?
Yes, as they say, it's the New South Wales Labor disease. If you're travelling a bit badly, you get rid of the leader. So in a sense, Dr. Napthine is yet to win an election, and of course neither has Daniel Andrews. Daniel Andrews has had a rather traditional career path, if you like, for, well, Labor and increasingly Liberal parliamentarians. He worked as an electorate officer, he worked in head office of the Labor Party, and he was elected to Parliament. And of course he was a minister in the previous government, so he has a degree of experience that some opposition leaders don't have.
When I lived in Melbourne, sometimes a Labor leader would visit me at the office, and it was always odd because my receptionist never recognised them. It was hard to get recognised as a Labor leader down there. And I understand that Daniel or Dan has had the same problem.
Yes, he has. But it's not as big a problem as people make out. In Victoria, at least, popularity of leader leading up to an election is much less important than popularity of party. Let's remember, way back in 1992, Joan Kerner was much more popular than Geoff Kennett. That didn't stop Labor losing the election in a landslide. I mean, that's why I'm continuing to predict a Labor victory, simply because the opinion polls have been so consistent. There's been barely any movement during the campaign, and there's been barely any movement for the last 15 months.
And I understand, Brian, that even the reduction of the name Daniel to Dan is a consequence of a bit of fine-tuning or spin-doctoring.
Yes, I think, quite frankly, I think that's a bit silly. But anyway, I suppose that was picked up through the usual path of focus groups, and there it is. I'm not sure whether it's caught on terribly well.
Well, yesterday upon the stair, I met a man who wasn't there. Tell us about Jeff Shaw, because he's a player, isn't he, in this strange election?
Yes, he is a contributor to the condition that the government finds itself in, which really a first-term government shouldn't be in this position. Geoff Shaw was one of those people brought into Parliament at the 2010 election. He, for the seat of Frankston in the outer southeast, and he's proved to be a real problem for the government. There was issues about his travel allowances and use of the parliamentary car. All this led to a terrible situation where he was in conflict with the Speaker of the Parliament, who eventually resigned. Mr Shaw was then expelled from the parliamentary party, the Liberal Party. Then he left the party as a whole. He sat as an independent. And, of course, the result at the last election was so close that his vote has been very problematic for the government, and it's got them into a real difficulty.
Brian, forgive me for raising a ludicrous issue at the time of an election, but are there any policy issues?
Yes, there are. And unfortunately for the government, it's working against them. I think the two big policy issues, and this is hardly unusual for state elections, are health and education. And remember that the state treasurer brought down what we would call an election year budget, and everyone's forgotten about that because the Abbott government brought down a budget that was anything but an election year budget, and particularly was criticised in the areas of health and education, which resonate very strongly with Victorian voters. And I don't think that's done the government any favours.
Are you suggesting that Tony Abbott isn't going to be carried shoulder high through cheering crowds during this election, a bit like Obama's problem in the midterms?
No, he's not going to be carried through the crowds. In fact, he's hardly been here. We've had John Howard campaigning here, and there's much talk about Julie Bishop campaigning in this last week. I think this is all a bit too late. I mean, it's the old Peter Costello comment about you don't start fattening a pig on market day.
What a vulgar way of putting it, but okay. If the Liberals lose this weekend, which seems, as you say, very likely, the Federal Party will immediately say the result was decided on state-based issues.
Yes, they will say that, but that really isn't true. This election is rather unusual. We know from past that voters can distinguish between federal and state issues. The problem that the state government has got is that health and education are both federal and state issues, and what happened with the federal budget and the fact that the two big items, that is the Medicare co-payment and higher education, have not yet been resolved. I mean, they're still hanging there. And I don't know why, but the government, the federal government, is moving, I think, later this week to act on the university deregulation legislation, which has proved to be very unpopular in Victoria.
Brian, you wrote a book a couple of years ago on the political role of independents in our parliaments, and we've already mentioned in passing Geoff Shaw. Do you see any potential independents arriving on the scene?
No, I don't. Victoria has not been a happy hunting ground for independents. New South Wales is much more fertile territory for them. There is one outside possibility that there is an independent running in the seat of Morwell, which is held by the National Party. For them, it's very safe. That is, it's safe against the ALP. But this candidate has community backing and is running on the issue of the problems in the mine fire that occurred there and the alleged health difficulties that it created. Now, they were trying to base their campaign on the Voice for Indi issue of last year that, of course, saw Sophie Mirabella defeated in Indi by an independent. I don't think that campaign has got enough traction. I think they started a bit late, and they don't seem to be as active as they need to be. But I would think that's the only possible unusual outcome.
Brian, the term spin doctor became a cliche a decade or so ago, but there's a new term that's entered the vocabulary, and that's the preference whisperer. And I understand the very same whisperer who helped the independents get elected in the federal Senate is active in Victoria, but in your view, not likely to be effective.
Well, that's in the hands of Victorians. We've doubled the number of parties that are registered this election from last election up to 21. I was having a look yesterday at some of the preference allocations by micro parties, And I think there's gaming going on. Now, how successful that will be, we won't know until, well, probably not, we probably won't know on Saturday night. But, of course, Victorians can trump preference whisperers, because unlike in the Senate, the Victorian upper house has optional preferential voting below the line. So instead of having to fill out dozens of squares in order to cast a valid vote, you can cast a valid vote in the Victorian Legislative Council by simply accurately rank ordering five candidates. I mean, you can go on and rank as many others as you want, but if you rank those five, that's your vote and they're your preferences. But we all know if you go above the line and just put one against the party of your choice, you voted that party's preference out of vote card, which you probably know very little about.
I understand that PUP has lost its popularity in Victoria, but what about the Greens?
The Greens are polling very strongly at the moment. They've been polling 17%.
Now, really? That's
yes,
quite solid.
Very high. They've got designs on four inner Melbourne seats. I think they're only a chance in the seat of Melbourne, and I'm not sure, because the Liberals are not preferencing them. So they're going to have to depend on preference flows from elsewhere and leakages from the Liberal Party ticket. Now, there were leakages last time, but not enough to defeat the City Labor members. I think what will happen here is that the Green vote will actually be lower than that on the day. This tends to happen with the Greens, that they poll very strongly. It wouldn't surprise me if they go down to about 13%. They hold three seats in the Legislative Council. Now, normally on that vote, you'd say, well, they'll hold them quite comfortably. But because of these micro-parties and these preference arrangements, we really can't be sure about who's going to win the fifth place in any of the eight Legislative Council regions. So I think the Greens, while their vote is very good, their result might not be reflected in that.
Brian, thanks for your time. Good on you. Brian Kostok, Professor of Political Science at Swinburne University. And this is LNL on RN, coming up, as advertised, the First Nations Summit for Freedom.